Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to throw rock box in the start.
March 13th, 2018.
8:05 on the East Coast. This is the Ant Canary Experience. I'm your host, Ant Canary. Welcome to the show. Tonight, we've got a special show tonight. We may go over to 10 o'clock limit. Usually the show goes, usually runs between 8 and 10. Tonight, we may go a little bit over because this is a special program tonight. Tonight, we're going to be asking the question, what is environmental racism? But not only are we going to be doing that, we are going to be having, I'm planning on having some special guests come on tonight. First guest that we're going to have, that we're planning on having to come on in about maybe 30 minutes to an hour maybe, Sister Misty is going to be joining us tonight. And for some of you that have been with the initiative for a while, she's one of the founding members of the Initiative Radio Network. Matter of fact, her father, Brother Jesse, had a weekly program with the network, and he is the one that brought me into the network. So I owe him a whole bunch of thank yous for hooking me up with the Initiative Radio Network. And ever since I've been with the network, I'm friends with everybody on the network. Brother Jesse is, you know, he, like I said, he introduced me to the network, and Sister Misty has been helping guiding me ever since I've been with the network. So, you know, she's, you know, real tight. So she's going to come on tonight and talk about this because she is from Michigan, and we're going to be talking about Flint, the water crisis in Flint, which is really jacked up. And we're going to be talking about that and a few other things tonight. So tonight we're going to do things a little different. I only have four clips, and they're not very long, but they get into what we're talking about tonight. And not only are we planning on having her, but she's planning on having other people call in from Michigan, talk about what's going on in Flint. So if you want to call in and get in on this, the number to call is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. And the chat room is open also. If you can't call and want to get in on this, and feel free to get to the chat room, and you can post your questions, comments, or whatever. That'll be just fine. So I had to talk about this for this week because I don't think a lot of people know what environmental racism is. Some people may have never heard of it. Some people may have, didn't know what it was, kind of knew about it, didn't know if it had a name, but kind of had an idea what it was about. This goes back, I'm going to read the definition to you in a minute. Like I said, the clips are not very long, but they do have information in them. And this kind of goes back to some of the many shows that I've done before about racism, about how the government created ghettos, how the government had a law called redlining, which meant that black people could only live in certain parts of towns and cities in this country, and it was all illegal. It's just, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're talking about tonight, the government did, you know, and it's kind of jacked up that, you know, you would think that this country likes to claim that it's the greatest country in the world, which it's not, can do this to its people, which it's been doing for, hell, next year, 400 years. 400. So, you know. So to think that the government would not do this kind of stuff, well, I'm here to tell you that is not true. We can see this today with the Flint. There are a lot of other communities in this country that are going through something similar to this. And the current administration wants to get rid of the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency. If you are under the age of 30, you may not remember how it used to be back in the day where New York and L.A., a lot of the larger cities were full of smog, which is smog is, what is it, smut and fog, how people would walk around with masks on because the air was just so jacked up to even breathe. Matter of fact, they've got that going on in China. But back in the day, I mean, if you're young and don't remember that, look that up. You will see how jacked up the air quality was for cities in this country. You know, then we get the EPA to come in, clean up the air. So now we have air to breathe because nobody wants to breathe crappy air. Same thing with water. People enjoy drinking clean water. Nobody wants to drink water with junk in it, even though there are countries in this world that, I mean, people actually drinking water, rivers, streams, you know, they're not able to get clean water like we are here. I remember in my neighborhood, there was, and I lived on the south side of town. There was a, not in my neighborhood, but close to my neighborhood, there was a dump. And it was kind of weird, now that I think about it. It was on a road. It was on a road that led to a dead end, that led to woods. And what people would do is people would drive into the woods, and they would dump their trash. You'd have trash. You'd have, I remember, I went back there one time to dump some trash, couches, beds, furniture, just about anything you can think of. People would travel down this, it was a dirt road, travel down this dirt road in the woods and just throw whatever they had away and just on about the business. Now that road has been paved and it connects to one of the bigger roads in town, and you would not even, if you didn't even know it was there, you wouldn't even know it. You drive through, I hadn't driven down that road in a while, even though I've been in hometown a couple of weeks ago. If you would get on that road right now and drive through it, you would not even know it used to be a dump. But that's what people should do. They throw the stuff out there, and sometimes you go back there and people burning trash, you know, all that stuff is going into the air, and that's just the way they used to do back in the day. This was back in the late 70s, early 80s, where they paved that road and connected it to another road. So, yeah, you go back there now, drive on that street now, and you would not even – it's a two-lane street. You wouldn't even know that it used to be a dump there. Yeah, I mean, it seems like with the stories we're going to talk about tonight, it seems like all the crappy things in towns, always in sections of towns where their minorities live. You wouldn't see dumps on the white side of the town. You wouldn't have these problems. The affluent parts of town, only in the parts of town that are convenient for to do this kind of stuff, and nobody would say anything. Trying to think of some other examples. A lot of people, you have dumps on those sides of town. You have there was one clip that I listened to. I wanted to get this. It was a 10-minute clip talking about what they call Cancer Alley in Alabama. They have refineries, oil refineries. Matter of fact, they showed the map of this alley. I did some work there back in 2015. My job sent me there. I worked there for a couple of weeks. Had no idea. It's part of Louisiana with people getting sick, people getting cancer. They're being exposed to stuff in the air, being exposed to stuff in the water, soil, all kinds of stuff. And this is a stretch of Louisiana where they have oil refineries, and I did some work 2 weeks at an oil refinery down there. So people, people are complaining because people are getting sick. people are getting cancers, people are dying, and if the government won't do anything to help you, I mean, who will? Yeah, I mean, you know, you really have to go back, you know, find websites, YouTube works, to go back and see videos of how it used to be versus now. Because now, you know, the EPA, lots of regulations were put on these companies for jacking up the air, jacking up the water and everything. And there are certain people in this country, rich people in particular, that don't like regulations on anything. And the reason why they don't like regulations on anything, because regulations hurt their profits. The only thing that they worry about are profits. They don't worry about anything else. So, you know, if you put regulations on things, you know, most regulations are put to protect the regular people. Bank regulations, you know, regulations, and tonight we're talking about the environment. You know, people don't want to drink dirty water. People don't want to breathe dirty air. You know, so screw your profits. You know, that's why they're trying to get rid of people, companies burning coal. That smoke gets in the air and it causes diseases and all that kind of stuff. Nobody wants to breathe that. But you have some people that think that their bottom line is more important than people's health. They don't care. They don't care if you breathe that stuff in and die, get cancer. They don't give a damn. If it cuts into their profits, you know, there's a problem. So, you know, so we have to put a stop to this kind of stuff. And in order to put a stop to it, we need to understand what's going on with it. So, so I'm just going to read you a short definition right quick. Let me give out call in number 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And matter of fact, the clips give a little bit more information. But I just want to give you a little bit of background before the calls come in, because hopefully everybody will call in and, you know, put a face on this, because this is rather messed up. Environmental racism is a term used to describe environmental injustice in a racialized context. Some Western nations, environmental racism refers to socially marginalized racial minority communities, which are subjected to disproportionate exposure to pollutants, denial of access to sources of ecological benefits, such as clean air, water, and natural resources, or both. Within an international context, environmental marginalization may apply to disadvantaged ecological relationships between industrialized nations and the global south, and is often associated with colonialism, neoliberalism, and globalization. Instances of environmental racism can include exposure to toxic waste, flooding, pollution from heavy industrial or natural resource extraction developments, lack of utilities such as clean water, or exclusion from land development and natural resource-related decision-making. Historically, the term is tied to the environmental justice social movement that began in the 1970s and 80s in the United States. Like I said, back in those days, if we had YouTube, if we had social media back then, you know, you would see how jacked up the sky was, you know, people breathing in this dirty air and all this kind of stuff. Unfortunately, we didn't have that back then. So let me just give a few examples. Just then we're gonna play the clips. So tonight we're gonna be talking about Flint, Michigan. Their water, their water crisis there. I'm not gonna talk a whole lot about that. I want to save that to show. San Antonio, Texas, Kelly Air Force Base. Was a place where they had, and this was This was based in Texas, San Antonio, Texas. A mostly Hispanic population around it. That's one I didn't know anything about. I'm not gonna read all of that because the chance just look it up. But it's, you know. Here's one. Warren County, North Carolina, had a PCB landfill. Between June 1978 and August 1978, 30,000 gallons of polychlorinated, I can't even say that word, bipyhalines, I think, PCB, contaminated waste was illegally deposited along 210 miles of North Carolina roads. Warren County is one of six counties along the Black Belt of North Carolina. The Black Belt, the counties residing in the Black Belt are significantly poorer than the rest of the state. In the early 1980s, the residents in Warren County earned an average per capita income of $6,984 compared to $9,283 for the rest of the state. In 1980, the population of Warren County was 54.5% African American. So in 82, the NAACP had to file a lawsuit to block the landfills that was going on down in that part of the state. Chicago. The Outgeld Gardens is a housing community located in South Chicago that was built in 1945 on an abandoned landfill to accommodate returning African-American World War II veterans. Surrounded by 53 toxic facilities and 90% of the city's landfills, the Outgeld Gardens area became known as a toxic donut. With 90% of its population African-American and 65% below the poverty level, this is considered a classic example of environmental racism. The toxins in this area included mercury, ammonia gas, lead, DDT, PCBs, PAHs, heavy metals, and xylene. The residents of gardens are surrounded by landfills, a chemical waste incinerator, and piles of loose trash. These living conditions have affected the health of the community. 1984, a study done by Illinois' public health sector revealed excessive rates of prostate, bladder, and lung cancer. Additionally, medical reports have indicated high rates of children born with brain tumors, high rates of fetuses that had to be aborted after tests revealed that the brains were developed outside of the skull, higher rates of asthma, ringworm, and other ailments. Despite evidence of health problems, the residents have not been relocated to another housing project. Chester, Pennsylvania. Provides an example of social, political, and economic forces that shape the disproportionate distribution of environmental hazards in poor communities of color. Chester is located in Delaware County, an area with a population of 500,000 that, excluding Chester, is 91% white. Chester, however, is 65% African American, the highest minority population and poverty rate in Delaware County, and recipient of a disproportionate amount of environmental risk and hazards. Chester has five large waste facilities, including a trash incinerator, a medical waste incinerator, and a sewage treatment plant. These waste sites in Chester have a total permitted capacity of 2 million tons of waste per year, while the rest of Delaware County has a capacity merely of 1,400 tons per year. One of the waste sites located in Chester is the Westinghouse Incinerator, which burns all of the municipal waste from the entire county and surrounding states. These numerous waste facilities engender very significant health risks to the citizens of Chester, as the cancer rate in this area is 2.5 times higher than it is anywhere else in Pennsylvania. Also, the mortality rate is 40% higher than the rest of Delaware County, and the child mortality rate is the highest. The clustering of all these polluting facilities in Chester points to environmental racism. New Orleans, Louisiana, has been cited as an example of past environmental racism. At the time of Hurricane Katrina, 60.5% of New Orleans residents were African American, a rate nearly 50% higher than the rest of the United States. Pre-existing racial disparities in wealth within New Orleans worsened the outcome of Hurricane Katrina for minority populations. Institutionalized racial segregation of neighborhoods left minority members more likely to live in low-lying areas that were more vulnerable to the devastating effects of the hurricane. Additionally, hurricane evacuation plans relied heavily on the use of cars and personal vehicles. However, because minority populations are less likely to own cars, some people had no choice but to stay behind, while white majority communities were able to escape. A report commissioned by the U.S. House of Representatives found that political leaders failed to consider the fact that 100,000 city residents had no cars and relied on public transit. The city's failure to complete its mandatory evacuation led to hundreds of deaths. Also, it affected Native Americans. The Indian Removal Act of 1830, I did a show on, and the Trail of Tears may be considered early examples of environmental racism in the United States. By 1850, all tribes east of the Mississippi had been removed to western lands, essentially confining them to lands that were too dry, remote, or barren to attract the attention of settlers and corporations. Later, during World War II, military families were often located to reservations, leading to a situation in which a disproportionate number of most dangerous military facilities are located near Native American lands. More recently, Native American lands have been used for waste disposal by the United States and multinational corporations, but illegal dumping poses a greater threat. Right now, they're facing the Dakota Access Pipeline. The pipeline would start in North Dakota and travel to Illinois. Although it does not cross directly on a reservation, the pipeline is under scrutiny because it passes under a section of the Missouri River, which is a key water source for Native American tribes such as the Standing Rock Sioux. The pipeline also transverses a sacred burial ground for the Standing Rock Sioux. The tribe is upset because they argue the federal government did not adequately engage the Standing Rock Sioux during the permitting process, which is required by the federal government. Matter of fact, I just this is talking about Louisiana's chemical corridor, which I just talked about a second ago, which they call Cancer Alley. And this is, like I said, a strip. Lots of chemical plants are here. Shell gas, I worked at the Shell gas refinery there. They were accused of putting chemical emissions in the air. People there started experiencing illnesses. Asthma and children and cancer. People were dying. Here's something interesting. Shell offered to buy out the homes that the residents owned. However, the property value was so low due to Shell that it wouldn't have allowed the residents to get new housing. Eventually, after protesting and making the issue a public matter, Shell eventually agreed to relocate the residents. This goes all over. I mean, this is all over the world. China, Ecuador, India, Nigeria, So this is just not something that happens here. This happens all over, unfortunately. This is all over the world. And, you know, like I said, some people are just so greedy that they don't care that their products are killing people and hurting the environment. You know, you need to remember, because, you know, a lot of people seem to forget this. This is the only Earth that we have. We don't, I mean, it ain't like we can just up and leave and go to another planet. You know, once we jack this planet up, I mean, where else is there to go? There's nowhere else to go. Let me give out the number again, 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. Chat room is open. All lines are open if you want to call in. I think Sister Misty will be calling in close to 9 o'clock, which is cool. Still do a little bit of talking here while we wait. Got a few clips to play. They're not long clips. But like I said, I think this is important to talk about. Let's see. And like I said, the government, current cabinet, wants to get rid of the EPA. The guy in charge of this, well, the guy that I didn't vote for, he puts people in charge of these offices and these cabinet of these positions, knowing full well that the people in charge of these don't like them to begin with. You know, for example, the EPA, the clown that's in charge of the EPA wants to get rid of it. So what do they do? Hey, let's put him in charge. Makes no sense. No sense at all. Just click on this site. Just click on this right. This talks about the landfill, PCB landfill here in North Carolina, where PCBs were dumped. People were affected. It took a lawsuit to, let me just read a little bit of this. Purpose of the Warren County PCB landfill, as the public knew it, was to bury 60,000 tons of PCB contaminated soil that had been contaminated with toxic PCBs between June and August 1978. By Robert Burns, a business associate with Robert Buck Ward of the Ward PCB Transformer Company of Raleigh. Burns and his sons deliberately dripped 31,000 gallons of PCP-contaminated oil along some of the 240 miles highway shoulders in 14 counties. Burns of Jamestown, New York, was supposed to take the oil to a facility to be recycled. Allegedly, the rationale for Burns' crime was that he wanted to save money by circumventing the new EPA regulations that would have made waste disposal more transparent and costly. But he could have easily, discreetly, and illegally disposed of the PCP contaminated oil in a matter of hours. Burns and Ward were sent to prison for a short time for their involvement in the crime. The Ward Transformer site would later go into the EPA Superfund cleanup list and be the primary polluter of Lake Crabtree, which is close by here, and the Neuse River Basin, which is close by here in the vicinity of Raleigh, North Carolina. Contaminants from the Ward site have been detoxified, but the area around the site and surrounding creeks, lakes, and rivers have been permanently polluted. So there you go. Like I said, a lot of these, you know, these people they're just out to make a buck. They don't care about nobody else. And this is a pretty long article if you want to look it up. This is, you know, and I had forgot all about this. I was a kid back then in the 80s. You know, I would never have known this was going on because, you know, I wasn't paying attention to the news back then a whole lot. But like I said, this is 78 to, just lost it. Anyway, this is back in the late 70s, early 80s. I had no clue. I didn't even, being a kid, you don't even worry about this kind of stuff. But we are going to talk about Flint, Michigan, which is very, you know, been in the news, very jacked up. What they did there, you know, everybody involved in that should have been locked up. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. They all should have been locked up. Once you find out exactly what they did and how they did it, then try to play it off like nothing happened. Boy, oh boy. But, you know, like I said, they're just people that, you know, they don't care. As long as they're making their money, as long as they, you know, they don't care about anything else. If it cuts into their bottom line, there's a problem. You know, people get cancer and die. Whose problem is that? Whose problem is that? It's just, you know, just greed. Greed has got this country and this world jacked the hell up. You know, Brother Malcolm said it best. Capitalism. There is no capitalism without racism. I hope I said that right. But he's exactly right. He's exactly right about that. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to play these clips in a few minutes. And we're just waiting on Sister Misty to call in. She said she's going to have some other people call in. So I hope you know, we get an earful of what they have to say about this. It is a very important topic to talk about. 563-999-3682. I'm going to play the first clip. It's a very short clip. It just gives you a definition of, actually it's called Environmental Racism Explained. It's a good clip. Okay, I'll be right back.
When we think of racial injustice, we think police brutality or the criminal justice system. But what about our air and water? Environmental racism. It's about policies and practices that discriminate against communities of color by making them live near landfills, sewage plants, and other polluting facilities. And while poverty has a lot to do with it, the leading environmental justice expert told me this.
Racism trumps class. Even middle-income African Americans are more likely to live in more polluted neighborhoods.
In fact, one study found that Black Americans making $50,000 to $60,000 a year are more likely to live in polluted neighborhoods than white Americans who make just $10,000 a year. Flint, Michigan is a textbook case of environmental racism. It's where 100,000 residents have been poisoned with toxic water contaminated by high levels of lead. Why? Because the state was trying to save a buck. Flint is around 57% Black, with 40% of its population living in poverty. Residents protested the dirty water for over a year, but were ignored. And that's how environmental racism plays out. Minority communities have much less political clout, so regulators can, and often do, ignore them. And not far from Flint is Detroit, where 83% of the population is Black. It's home to the most polluted zip code in Michigan.
Zip code is the most powerful predictor of health. And all communities and all zip codes are not created equal.
Southwest Detroit is surrounded by a lot of industry, like salt mining, steel production, tar sands oil refining, and coal burning. And that's meant that 1.6 million pounds of chemicals enter that community yearly. Not coincidentally, Wayne County, where Detroit is, has the highest number of children's asthma cases in the state. But look, environmental racism isn't just a Michigan story. It's an American story. Take, for example, Louisiana's Cancer Alley, an 85-mile stretch along the Mississippi River. It's known for its over 200 petrochemical plants and a high rate of cancer, mainly among black residents. So is there anyone protecting folks from environmental racism? Well, there's supposed to be. The Environmental Protection Agency has a special department called the Office of Civil Rights. But in its 22-year history, the office has never formally found a single case of discrimination. In fact, more than 90% of communities that make complaints find them rejected or dismissed. On top of that, The Guardian newspaper recently revealed that U.S. authorities across the country are deliberately distorting water tests in cities like Detroit and Philadelphia to minimize the reported amount of lead in the water. Environmental racism, while not always the most visible form, is also widespread. So, when is enough enough?
The correct quote from Brother Malcolm is, you cannot have capitalism without racism. And a lot of these stories, people in charge are only out to make a quick buck. They don't give a damn about nobody else but them, which is very jacked up, very jacked up. 563-999-3682. Still waiting. Still got time. Let me see what I can do. Got not a long clip. Let's see. This one is. Oh yeah. This one is. Oh no. I'm sorry. That's the. Okay. Yeah, this is a different one. Talking a little bit more about environmental racism. I do have a clip where it talks about the EPA, how crooked the EPA is, and it never used to be like this until recently, unfortunately. But we just have people in government, you know, now. You know, used to be business. Now it's people and it's people in government and business. They just don't give a damn about regular people, unfortunately. So this is a short clip giving just a little bit more information about what exactly environmental racism is.
Donald Trump, elected president.
There are major developments tonight in the case of a neighborhood watch.
Refugee camps in the neighboring countries are becoming oversaturated. There is no job.
As Trump accelerates his assault on the environment, it's important we address a few issues surrounding climate change.
Let's talk a little policy first off. What did you think of the global warming summit in Paris this week?
I think it's ridiculous. We have bigger problems right now, and to have the president be there for an extended period of time talking about global warming being the biggest problem facing this country is insane.
The nationwide fight against climate change often fails to acknowledge a critical component. Environmental racism. Environmental racism describes a disturbing reality that black people are more likely to live in environments that are toxic and hazardous to their health. According to a study on toxic waste and race, race was by far the most prominent factor in the location of hazardous waste landfills, more prominent than household income and home values. According to a study by Environmental Justice and Health Alliance, the percentage of black people living in proximity to hazardous sites is 75% greater than the United States as a whole. African Americans are shown to have higher levels of carbon monoxide in their blood, lead poisoning disproportionately affects children of color, and communities of color generally have higher exposure to air pollution and water contamination. So how did we get here? Environmental racism is a manifestation of the effects of discriminatory housing, residential segregation, discriminatory zoning regulations, and imbalances in political power. These sometimes intentionally racist policies kept black people trapped in resource-deprived neighborhoods and exacerbated poverty and marginalized black communities. Black black neighborhoods, which lacked political clout, were used as sites for hazardous dumping, causing pollution, contamination, eventually leading to the unimaginable neglect and disparate health outcomes that we see today. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency is theoretically supposed to promote environmental justice for vulnerable communities across the nation. Their website reads, "The EPA's goal is to provide an environment where all people enjoy the same degree of protection from environmental and health hazards and equal access to the decision-making process to maintain a healthy environment in which to live, learn, and work." Despite the obvious reality that environmental racism is pervasive across the country, in 2015, it was reported that the EPA denies 95% of the civil rights claims that are filed, consistently dismissing our most vulnerable communities. As we fight for climate change awareness, keep in mind that climate change disproportionately affects low-income communities of color, and therefore dismantling anti-black racism is key to tackling climate change. I'm Marie Muhammad, and this is Woke Up Late.
Okay, they're talking a little bit about climate change in that clip. And there are people in this country that don't believe in climate change. I think there is climate change. I mean, I can see that from where I live right now. You know, I pretty much grew up in the state of North Carolina, and I remember back in the day we would probably get one snowstorm per year. Now we getting snow all the time. We got snow yesterday. It wasn't a whole lot, but we still got it. And the problem with that is when we get snow, people around here lose their minds and they go and stock up on bread and milk for whatever reason. I guess they're going to make a milk sandwich. But we used to not get a whole lot of snow here, but now we do. I lost count how many times it snowed around here. This is March. I think it snowed, not counting yesterday, maybe two or three other times before that. I'm not sure exactly. But, you know, we used to get one snowstorm, one snow per year. It used to be pretty much warm all the way up until late October, November. Then it would get cold. Then it would warm up again. We wouldn't get a whole lot of snow, but we've been getting a whole lot of snow lately. Hurricanes, we've been getting quite a few of those. And even though I don't live on the coast, we do still feel the effects, depending on which way it comes in. And I have been, you know, here in Raleigh, you know, hunkered down, going through hurricanes. Matter of fact, went through Hurricane Matthew while I was at work. Got off work. Come home and drove through pretty good rainstorm. My hometown got hit pretty bad. So there's got to be something affecting this weather. But some people, you know, they want to pish it. It's got nothing to do with me. You got nothing to do with us. You know, and it's like one of those things. Some people either they get it or they just don't want to get it. And lots of times it's just people just don't, they see what they want to see, they believe what they want to believe, they think what they want to think, and there's no change in their mind. So, you know, people like that is like, well, what can you do about it? You can't do a whole lot about it. So we just, you know, you must say screw it and just go on about your business. But yeah, there's something definitely going on with the weather. And also, I was thinking about this while that clip was playing. You can pull up a map of mostly, well, you can do it any size community. And if you pull up a map of any city, look on the south side or the side of town where a lot of minorities live, and you will find dumps, you know, stuff like that in these communities where you won't find the same things in white communities. And it just goes back to what I talked about before, redlining, government creating ghettos, pushing black people and minorities in certain parts of town, and they put them over there, and then all of a sudden, you know, the town may need a landfill. Where you put the landfill? South side of town, or where there's a bunch of black folk, a bunch of brown folk. That's where you put it. I forgot, and I was thinking too, I forgot about this. Also in my hometown, there was, I remember, it's not there any, I don't know if it's still there or not. It used to be when they started recycling refrigerators and washing machines and stuff like that. Where was that at? South side of town. I remember I got a summer job working with a couple of years. I worked working with the housing authority, cutting grass, picking up trash, stuff like that, and made a few runs with the old washing machines, old machineries and stuff. We would take it over there to that place, and they would recycle that stuff. And now that I'm thinking about it, here in Wake County, there used to be, it's not there anymore, they built a highway through it. There used to be a dump landfill in southeastern Raleigh. But now, if I'm not mistaken, now they make mulch for gardens and stuff like that. There used to be a landfill over there. In southern Wake County, they've got plants where they recycle plants. Matter of fact, there's one directly across the street from a YMCA and a housing in a black neighborhood, and it's a pretty big size recycle place. I mean, when I say it directly across the street, it is directly across the street. You can walk across the street to the place and walk and turn around and walk right back across the street again. Two lane road directly across from a black neighborhood. And then there's one a little bit further down the street going toward Garner, and there's another place like that where they recycle stuff. And it is across, it is close to a neighborhood. I think the neighborhood is mixed. And it's across, it's on the same side of the street, just it's a few miles down from the one in Raleigh. But they recycle a lot of metals. They do, I think they started doing computers, you know, TVs and stuff like that. And it's right across the street from our neighborhood, too. So you could pull up a map of any good-sized town or city or something like that. And if you go to the south side of town, look at a map, see the south side or any side of where minorities live, you will see things like that on that side of town. And I got to say, it was, you know, done on purpose. Because you have to remember the redlining, government making the ghettos, systematic racism. They clump all of the minorities on one side of town, and they already have considered that land on that side of town is not worth a whole lot anyway. So you get somebody coming in, building landfills or power plants or, you know, things like that. What are they going to say? There's nothing they can do about it. You know, there's lots of people that just can't up and move. You know, and then if you really want to go back, you know, couldn't vote, so they had no power, you know, politically. So what were they going to do about it? You know, they had no choice. Either you stay or you move. A lot of people couldn't move, so they had no choice but to stay there. And as a result, they getting sick, you know. But it wasn't their fault. It's just way it was. You know, you have the EPA coming in trying to clean all this up. For years, it did a pretty good job. You know, now you have an administration that, you know, profits over people. I mean, if you want to, you know, have a saying or whatever you want to say, you know, that would be theirs. Profits over people. You know, they can give a damn about, you know, you having clean water or you having clean air. Who cares? As long as they keep making their money, as long as their you know, bottom line is good, they don't care. They really don't care. They really don't give a damn, which is pretty messed up. Pretty messed up. But it's important that we don't forget about this stuff and we keep talking about it, because these are people's lives that we're talking about. And this thing in Flint, Michigan, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, it's almost 9 o'clock East Coast time. This could happen anywhere. And they almost got away with it. People didn't start talking about it, bringing it to, you know, national attention. They almost got away with it. And if you hear the story or you read the story about what they did and how they did it, and then they pretty much turned it back and pretended all the stuff going on, people talking about it, it's like, I'm just talking about, you know. Then they tried to play it off, you know, people getting sick, getting diseases, is like, you know, this is supposed to be, allegedly, you know, the greatest country in the world. You can find all the money you want to fight a war, but you can't find the money to help the poor. This is the greatest country in the world. Right. Okay. Whatever. And that what the young people say now? Whatever. Whatever. 563-999-3682. It's almost 9, so we've got a few minutes. We're gonna keep going. This clip, the last clip I play is gonna be the long clip. That's gonna be the clip talking about Flint. But this next clip, it's not a long clip, but it talks about the EPA and what they did recently. Matter of fact, they don't seem to have a problem with environmental racism. They seem to think that it's okay. And this is a department of your government. You know, you get what the government you get is the government that you deserve. If you vote for these people, they get in office and they just decide that they want to do what they want to do. The hell with you and everybody else. You get what you deserve. That's pretty much the bottom line. You get the government you deserve. Unfortunately. So, if you get these greedy ass hats in government, and all they care about is them, they don't care about nobody else, and you voted for them, well, you get what you get the government that you voted for. So you have this agency that is supposed to make sure that we all have clean air, clean water, we don't have contaminants in the soil, you know, we're not catching cancers and, you know, stuff like this. And you've got an agency that just don't give a damn. I mean, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do about it? Is this, you know, these people are supposed to be protecting us, and they just don't, they don't give a damn. They just don't give a damn. It's pretty pathetic. Pretty pathetic. So this is number three. Glad to be right back.
The town of Uniontown, Alabama is a predominantly African American community. And more than a decade ago, the state ruled that a coal company could open a toxic coal ash waste site in Uniontown. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, coal ash is highly volatile, contains cancer-causing chemicals, and it can very easily leach into waterways and underground aquifers and poison entire communities with these cancer-causing agents. But nonetheless, the state of Alabama said, you know what, go ahead and just put your coal ash dump here, right here in this black town, away from all of the white people. We call that environmental racism. And the people in Uniontown understood exactly what that was, and they had filed a lawsuit not long ago on the grounds that the placement of this toxic coal ash waste site actually violated the Civil Rights Act of the United States. And this week, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said, we don't care. They have refused to move the coal ash waste site, and they've said that the people of Uniontown have not provided enough evidence to show that in any way this is a case of environmental racism. Well, that's exactly what it is. That toxic coal ash dumping site could have gone anywhere in the state. Hell, it could have gone to another state. They do that all the time. Instead, they found one of the blackest communities possible and said, you know what? That's a good spot to put our toxic waste because those people don't really matter. That is the mentality of corporations operating in the United States today. And Uniontown is not alone. It's not an isolated incident. Environmental racism is prevalent all throughout the United States. In fact, it is so prevalent that African Americans and Hispanics are far more likely to be poisoned by toxic corporate waste than white people. They have an astronomically larger percentage chance of being the victims of corporate dumping. That's what we're looking at in America today. And that's not to say that white people don't get affected by this. They do. Everybody does. It's just much more likely to happen if you live in a poor African-American community or a Hispanic community, because those are the ones that corporations say, you know what, we could do without those people. Why not kill two birds with one stone? We get to get rid of our toxic waste. We get to poison these people that we don't like. Everybody wins, right? And the EPA under Scott Pruitt said, you know what? I like the way you think. We're not going to do a damn thing about this. We're going to continue to let these black people in Alabama be poisoned by toxic coal ash because we don't care. And to us, to the United States Environmental Protection Agency, environmental racism is A-OK in their book. If you're thinking about subscribing to our channel.
Okay. So actually, and that just reminded me of something. Actually, in the state of North Carolina, we are dealing with that coal ash problem. Let me see if I can find some information on that. What had happened was the largest, matter of fact, well, I guess you could call them a monopoly, power company in the state. Had a coal ash problem. Let's go. Let me see which one of these to read. Let's see which one. Which one would be a good one? Which one would be a good one? Let me find a good one there. Find a good one. This one is from a couple of years ago. But we had, like I said, the largest electric company in the state. Like many of the other electric companies in the country used to burn coal to make power. But what happened was an underground pipe had a Duke Energy steam station north of Greensboro had burst, and it spilled 39,000 tons of coal ash into the Dan River. It spread 70 miles downstream, and it took crews nearly a week just to stop the spill. And the state had 14 coal facilities and found contamination at mostly all of these facilities. After months of trying to clean that up, they could only get rid of, they could only clean up less than 10%. And then what the company tried, they've got until 2029 to get rid of this stuff. And they have to clean up every ash pond that they've got in the state. So they've got to dig this stuff up and then take it somewhere else. And according to them, they've gotten rid of 66,000 tons. And at the Dan River site, they're getting rid of 60,000 tons per month. And what they're doing with this stuff is they're, half of the coal ash from the site will be sent to landfills in Virginia. And the other half will be stored on site in lined and sealed containers. So this stuff is getting in the water. And I guess they figure people don't need to drink water, so, you know, you're on your own, people. Like I said, this, you know, this type of stuff, it's just greed. These people don't, I mean, a lot of these people don't care. They don't give a damn. And it's up to us to stop letting people get away with this stuff. You know, we can't, you know, we can't just keep letting people do what they want to do because, you know, why not? We can't do it. Because if we let them do this, I mean, they're gonna actually kill us. Because you gotta have clean water to drink, you gotta have clean air to breathe. So if we don't have these things, then what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? Breathe this stuff in and die? Not say anything about. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, what is it going to take us marching to get this stuff to get anything done? It's, you know, these people. I mean, they just don't care. All they care about is the bottom line. They don't care about nothing else. You die, if I die, we die. Nah. That's just the cost of doing business. As long as they don't die, they're good. But if everybody else dies, as long as their profit margin's good, they're all good. They don't care. They don't care. Let me see. I'm reading this message right quick. Let's see. Okay. Okay. So I'm getting this message that Sister Misty will not be able to join us tonight because she can't get off. So we will do part two next week. So that will work. So let me just send her a message. I've got one more clip to play. So what we'll do is, which it's all good. It's all good. I completely understand. So what we'll do is we'll just have a part two next week. So what we'll do this week is I'm setting this up for you. And the next week she'll come in, and then we'll do what we got to do. So that'll work. So let me just type this message right quick while I'm talking. But yeah, we can do that. We can do that. I understand how work is, so it's cool, especially when you're working in the medical field. I completely understand. That is just, you know, that is not a job that you can just, you know, up and leave whenever you're finished. So I completely understand. So what we'll do is we've got a few minutes left. So this is kind of like we'll just use this as an educational program, and then we'll do part two next week. And then hopefully she can come on and talk to us and then tell us what's going on in Flint, because, like I said, that's important. So we're going to use this week to set it up. So this next clip I'm going to play, it's not a long clip. Actually, I was trying to find a clip to figure out what's going on now. Because it was one of those things where we talked about it in the news like every day, and then it kind of died down. And I hope people have forgotten about it. So let's play this clip, and I'll be right back.
If you've been watching the news at all this year, I'm sure you've heard of the town Flint, Michigan. The water in Flint is contaminated with toxic chemicals like lead. But Flint is being affected by more than just faulty pipes. To understand what's really going on, we need to have a conversation about environmental racism.
The environment can't be racist.
Of course it's not. But the allocation of resources on the planet has almost always been decided by those in power. In the United States, for over 200 years, those in power were white.
Oh, don't make it about race.
We can't make it about race, because it already is. Studies have shown that a community's average skin color is the best indicator of whether or not a toxic waste site will be put in their neighborhood. While socioeconomic status, social class, can and does play into discrimination of this sort, generally, it is people of color that bear the brunt of man-made environmental dangers. This is environmental racism, defined by Bullard as any environmental policy, practice, or directive that differentially affects or disadvantages, whether intended or unintended, individuals, groups, or communities based on race or color. Environmental racism isn't a term most people are familiar with, but it is certainly an act that we have all witnessed. To give you an example, let's consider New Orleans in 2005. In 2000, prior to Hurricane Katrina, there were approximately 14,000 people living in the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. This particular neighborhood's population was made up of 98.3% Black or African American individuals.
Why do those numbers matter?
Statistics show that storms' impacts often weigh more heavily upon racial minorities and the poor. This was especially true in the Ninth Ward. Not only were these groups affected by the storm at a higher rate than their white counterparts, but Riley Morse's study showed that the recovery of socially and economically vulnerable storm victims continues to lag behind mainstream society. So how did this happen? Some research blamed the disproportionate impacts of Hurricane Katrina on settlement patterns. Morse explained that over the course of many years, racial segregation in this region established patterns of settlement for many African Americans in less desirable, flood-prone areas. The factors that put the largely Black community of the Ninth Ward in danger were decided long before Hurricane Katrina was ever on the radar. But not everything can be blamed on history. Policymakers at the time made specific decisions not to fix levees that were in desperate need of repair. The levees that most needed attention were those protecting the Ninth Ward, and so the devastation faced by all of its inhabitants was entirely preventable.
But that was just one time.
No. It's just an obvious example. Environmental racism also runs rampant in Flint, Michigan. the population of Flint is 57% black, and it is this portion of the population that is most directly affected by the water crisis. The trouble in Flint started around April 2014 and is still going on. The water in Flint is not being treated correctly and contains dangerously high levels of lead. Because of this, the water is undrinkable and unsafe. However, the residents in Flint have no other options than to use the contaminated water, and no other option but to continue to pay for the contaminated water. Much like Hurricane Katrina and other instances of environmental racism, the cause of this crisis cannot be traced back to a single decision by a particular individual. But the effects are very real and are felt most acutely by communities of color in Flint due to a poorly managed response.
Well, if we don't know whose fault it is, then who's supposed to fix it?
Bullard would tell us, everyone. He explains that the answer to environmental racism is environmental justice, the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Environmental racism is able to continue because, when no clear culprit is identifiable, the nation is content to leave the responsibility of repairing damage to the people that have been affected. When the rest of our communities are willing to take notice of those among us that are struggling, and, even more importantly, willing to demand justice for those people, environmental racism stops in its tracks. To Flint, Michigan, we see you. We hear you. It's our turn to step up. If you're interested in helping respond to the crisis...
Okay, so, yeah. That is just, I think what we need to do is, you know, whenever things like this come up, we need to, you know, not pretend that this kind of stuff is not going on and we need to do something about it. Because, you know, my thing is, if that can happen in Flint, that can happen anywhere. That can happen anywhere. You know, could be you, could be me, could be any of us. You know, nobody wants to drink dirty water. You know, nobody wants their kids to, you know, get sick, especially if it's something that's preventable. You know, nobody wants to go through that. You know, and if we don't say anything about it, they're not going to say anything about it. It's just messed up. Just messed up. I hit. Okay, so like I said, we will just use this show for tonight as a setup for next week, and we'll have Sister Misty come on and join us next week because I completely understand, you know, the deal about, you know, not being able to join in for, because of work and everything, so that's fine. So, and then hopefully she'll have other people come in and talk about the Flint situation. Let me see if I can find. Let me find one thing. Matter of fact, I'll probably go ahead and end this early. And then we'll just have her, and I think what we'll probably do next week, if she's able to come on, we'll just have the entire show. For her to talk about what's going on. But I think, unfortunately, I think with everything else going on, I think we have forgotten. About Flint, unfortunately. And it's pretty sad. Let's see if I can find something updated about what's going on down in Flint. And then, like I said, we'll have next week, we'll have Sister Misty come on and talk about it. Give us an update on what's going on, because she is in the area. Let me see. In order to reduce the water fund shortfall, they were having, they had an audit and a projected $25 million deficit. So in order to reduce the water fund shortfall, the city announced that a new pipeline would be built to deliver water from Lake Huron to Flint. 2014, while it was under construction, the city turned to the Flint River as a water source. Soon after the switch, residents said the water started to look, smell, and taste funny. Test in 2015 by the Environmental Protection Agency and Virginia Tech indicated dangerous levels of lead in the water at residents' homes. Lead consumption can affect the heart, kidneys, and nerves. Health effects of lead exposure in children include impaired cognition, behavioral disorders, hearing problems, and delayed puberty. The class action lawsuit charged that the state wasn't treating the water with an anti-corrosive agent in violation of federal law. As a result, the water was eroding the iron water mains, turning the water brown. Additionally, about half of the service lines to homes in Flint are made of lead, and because the water isn't properly treated, lead can leaching into the water supply in addition to the iron. Overall, more than a dozen lawsuits, including several additional class action suits, have been filed against Michigan and the city of Flint, as well as various state and city officials and employees involved in the decision to switch the source of the drinking water and those responsible for monitoring water quality. The range of remedies sought included monetary compensation for lead poisoning and refunds for water bills. So they were still charging these people to pay monthly water bills for water that they couldn't use. March 22nd, 2012, Ganese County announces a new pipeline being designed to deliver water from Lake Huron to Flint. The plan is to reduce costs by switching the city's water supplier from the Detroit Water and Sewage Department to Karen Gondi, I think that's how you say it, Water Authority. April 16, 2013, on the City Council's recommendation, Andy Dillon, the state treasurer, authorizes Flint to make the switch to Flint River water. April 25, 2014, the switch to water from the Flint River takes place. August 14, 2014, the city announces E. coliform bacterium has been detected in the water supply, promoting a boil water advisory for a neighborhood on the east side of Flint. The city boosts the amount of chlorine in the water and flushes the system. The advisory is lifted on August 20th. September 5th, 2014, Flint issues another boil water advisory at a positive test for total coliform bacteria. Presence of this type of bacteria is a warning sign that E. coli or other disease-causing organisms may be contaminating the water. City officials tell residents they will flush the pipes and add more chlorine to the water. After 4 days, residents are told they can safely resume drinking water from the tap. October 1st, 2014, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality issues a government's briefing paper outlining possible causes for the contamination issues. Among the problems are leaking valves and aging cast iron pipes susceptible to a buildup of bacteria. The MDEQ includes flushing the system and increasing chlorine in the water will limit the number of boil water advisories in the future. October 2014, the General Motors plant in Flint stops using the city's water due to concerns about high levels of chlorine corroding engine parts. The city strikes a deal with a neighboring township to purchase water from Lake Huron in lieu of using water from the Flint River. The switch is anticipated to cost the city $400,000. January 2nd, 2015. The city warns residents the water contains byproducts of this disinfectants that may cause health issues, including an increased risk for cancer over time. The water is deemed safe for the general population, but the elderly and patients and parents of young children are cautioned to consult with their doctors. Wait a minute. So if they're saying that the water can cause cancer, but then they say that it's okay to drink, but it's not okay for elderly people and young children to drink it, but it's okay for everybody else to drink, even though they say that it may cause cancer. Okay. I'm not going to read all of these because this list is quite it's pretty long. Let's see if there's anything recent. A recent one here is October 12th of 2017, and they're talking about Legionnaire disease is in the water. If it's possible, somebody could drink the water and catch it. Oh, wow. March 17, 2017, EPA announces that it had awarded $100 million to Flint for drinking water infrastructure upgrades. February 17, 2017, the Michigan Civil Rights Commission issues a report, "The Flint Water Crisis: Systematic Racism Through the Lens of Flint." According to the 129-page report, deeply embedded institutional, systematic, and historical racism. Deeply embedded institutional, systematic, and historical racism indirectly contributed to the ill-fated decision to tap the Flint River for drinking water as a cost-saving measure. It goes back to what I've been saying from the top of the program. There are just some people that are more concerned about saving a dollar than it is about taking care of people that live in these communities, which is pretty messed up. Let me just read you this last one, and then we'll call it a show and be ready for next week. We're going to really get into this hopefully next week. On December 20th, 2016, four officials, two of Flint's former emergency managers who reported directly to the governor, and two water plant officials are charged with felonies of false pretenses and conspiracy. They are accused of misleading the Michigan Department of Treasury into getting millions in bonds and then misused the money to finance the construction of a new pipeline and force Flint's drinking water source to be switched to the Flint River. Wow. Wow, this is really banged up. And it just goes back to show that there's just some greedy, ass people in this, you know, I mean, what can you say? Just greedy ass people. It's just greed. Greed over people. Profits over people. So, like I said, we'll go ahead and end this. This will be part one for this topic, and then we'll be back next week for part two, and hopefully Sister Misty will be able to join us to talk about this. I didn't have a lot of clips and stuff because, you know, the original plan was for her to come on, but since she couldn't come on, which is fine, we'll do this next week, so we'll hopefully I'll have some stuff in just in case. Yeah, if you do want to call in, if you do have stories to tell about this, the number to call is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682, and we'll have a part two of this topic for next week. And like I said, it's something that we need to talk about. I think it's just too easy for people just to forget about this kind of stuff. And we don't need to forget about this, you know, because it is important. I mean, these you've got people's lives. This is what we're talking about, especially children, you know. And then, too, with people, you know, having to buy bottled water. I mean, there are people that can't afford to buy water every single day. you know, or however they're doing it. And the officials did this just to save a buck, just to save a dollar. I mean, it makes no sense. So we'll be back next week for part two of this. Sorry about the slight hiccup, but it's all good. I mean, it's just one of those things where you can't avoid. That's just the way it is. And we'll be back next week for part two of what is environmental racism. And, you know, if you can join us, please join us. And I will see you next week. Peace out.